The four of you have chosen very different paths in life. A Marine, an actor turned jeweler, a businessman, a lifelong public servant. And yet your positions are very similar. How do you differentiate yourselves from each other and not just from your Democratic opponents? Mr. Craig?
I started my career as a teacher and assistant principal. That is my career. Back in 1971, I knew I wanted to be a teacher when I was in sixth grade, when they would send me down to actually substitute for second and third grade teachers. So I always enjoyed being a teacher. And then on the volunteer side is when I did public service. And that's because I went to Harvard Grace High School. And if you've ever been there, the motto of that school is enter to learn, leave to serve. And I'm a member of the Methodist Church, and our motto was enter to worship, leave to serve. Turned out it was the same man that wrote that. He was the assistant principal at the high school, and he was also the choral director at our church. So it's always been about public service, not a career as a politician. But that has given me the experience, having served 32 years in public service as a city councilman, as a mayor, as a county executive, but also as a delegate and a state senator. So we know what it's like on that side. Another thing that does prepare you, strangely enough, is being a coach. I coached soccer for 25 seasons, and that gets you ready, too, because then you know how to put a team together, you know how to come up with a game plan, you know how to put the two together to actually win the game and do what it is that you've been asked to do. But it's always, for me, it's always been about public service. And I do tell people I had three reasons why I ran for office. That was Randy, Courtney, and PJ, our son and our two daughters. I wanted this to be a good place for them to grow up, live, and work, and we won because they're all here.
Mr. George, I ask you, how do you differentiate yourself from the other candidates?
Thank you, Deborah. First of all, I want to thank the League of Women Voters for this forum. It's wonderful. I want to thank you also for the Stop the Gerrymander Award I received 2 days ago from your group, because there are nonpartisan issues. I want everyone to know when they say they're a nonpartisan group, they really are, and they've helped with many good government issues in the legislature. You mentioned that I was once an actor, but when I was in New York City, I saw runaways and homeless people out on the streets. I saw young women that were forced into drugs and then prostitution. And I got involved, and I volunteered, and I helped at a center, an emergency shelter for them. And I helped people, and I've always done that. I've always been involved with a lot of volunteer work. I even went and got a master's degree in clinical psychology to help children with learning disorders and to help in counseling services. So I have that experience. I also have the experience of being a small business owner. My dad could not afford to send me to college. I went to a trade school, and I learned a trade, doing jewelry repair and design. I went up to Syracuse because my uncle told me up there were no jewelers in town. They were sending all their work to New York. So I began a business there, and I paid my way through college at Syracuse University. So nothing's been handed to me. I also was moonlighting and acting and waiting on tables and all of that. I met my wife, a ballerina, in New York when I was doing the acting and the counseling work. And we quickly came down to Annapolis. I started my business, Ron George Jewelry Repair and Design. And then I started Ron George Jewelers in 1991. We have two locations of manufacturing. I get it. I'm a Main Street business person. I've been 8 years in the legislature. I've been successful there, and I'll talk about that a little later. But I have a well-rounded amount of experience that is not just a career politician, it's not just business, but I think it's all-encompassing. Thank you, Deborah.
Thank you, Mr. Hogan.
Well, first of all, I want to thank the League of Women Voters very much for giving us this opportunity. Thank WBAL and MPT for hosting us, and thank all of you here in the audience for coming out today. Really appreciate it, the opportunity to be here and to talk with you, and looking forward to the discussion. I'm not a professional politician. I've spent most of my life in the private sector. For the past 25 years, I've built a successful business that has brought hundreds of companies and thousands of jobs into the state of Maryland. I really didn't decide to run for governor out of any desire to be something. I really felt an obligation that I needed to do something. I felt like our state was way off track and headed in the wrong direction, and that our very economic future was at stake. My running mate, Secretary Boyd Rutherford, and I, we're the only ticket in either party where both candidates have real experience in actually running the executive branch of state government as cabinet secretaries. But even more importantly, we both have diverse private sector experience, which is something I think is lacking in Annapolis. We've really got three priorities. We're all about jobs, middle-class families, and restoring our economy. And we've got a plan. The first thing we're going to do is roll back spending, and we've identified $1.75 billion worth of very specific cuts. And then we're going to try to roll back as many of these 40 tax increases as we can, because it's just crushing middle-class families. Thank you for the opportunity to be here with you.
Thank you. And Mr. Lawler.
What distinguishes me from my counterparts, both on the Republican and Democrat side, let me first thank the League of Women Voters for this opportunity, as well as Maryland Public Television. I join the sentiments of my peers. We are honored that you all have us here. Not just 17 years of Marine Corps experience, but 16 years in business experience. Been an executive with a Fortune 500 company right here in Maryland, where I managed and employed over 212 partners and ran a P&L of $23 million. I'm also a two-year chairman of the Maryland's Taxpayers Association. I've been married to my wife, Rosha, for 20 years, 21 this October, and we have four daughters. I've raised four daughters in a house with five women that, for some of you all know, that's incredible and a feat in of itself. And then the most handsome grandson you'd ever see in your life. I've got pictures. I'm serious. Really beautiful boy who I love coming home to. But leadership matters. Experience matters, especially in leadership. And having led Marines in the combat, I've been deployed three different times, having been a business leader in this state, and having the know-how and the resource to take it seriously that in a state like Maryland, you have to go out and see the voters, whether they're Republicans or Democrats. I've spent the past 18 months in Prince George's County, Montgomery County, Baltimore City, with a very conservative message, but I found that that message resonates across the board. So when it comes to what separates me from my peers, it's leadership experience, but also the solutions that are nonpartisan. I'm interested in being the best governor of Maryland I can be, not the best Republican and not the best Democrat. Thank you all so much.
Thank you. We want to go to our audience because while they may be undecided, they're very thoughtful. So we want to go ahead and start with you and go ahead and tell me your name and your question.
My name is Chris Yoder. I'm from Baltimore City. And my question is simply, do you accept the fact that our planet is getting hotter and that human activity is a major cause of that increase? And how will you address this issue when you're in the governor's mansion?
All right. We're going to start with Mr. Lawler.
My biggest problem with a lot of things that have been said when it comes to the environment is, depending on who's doing the research, a lot of times the evidence is turned to one direction or another. And then the hypocrisy that's followed by those that put forth these issues of whether it's global warming, these issues of the environment getting hotter, and yet they're driving large SUVs themselves. Sometimes you get lost in the sauce of the hypocrisy. But with the recent hurricanes that we've seen in the past 3 to 5 years, the temperature swifts and changes. I mean, I grew up in Westchester, Pennsylvania, six other states, as a matter of fact, and I've seen a lot of the climate change. We don't have the winter, spring, summer, fall, you know, succession that we used to. There are some things going on. To what extent does government get involved with that? To what extent is that humans injecting what we do every day, whether it's building cars, driving cars, whether we're farming, whatever the case may be? I am not sure, to be honest with you. I'm not totally sold on the idea that humans are the problem. I happen to be a Christian, which for that point, I believe that God had a plan when he put man in this earth. Man and women in this earth, as well as animals in this earth. So I believe there's a greater plan for us all. But whether I'm tying all of my views environmentally to an idea that global warming is an issue that we can control or we can stop, I'm not sure. I'm interested in doing my own research. But I'd like for that research to be nonpartisan so we can address it. And then when I stand firm on something, I want to make sure I'm staying firm on it. I'm actually changing my lifestyle as well and not just preaching to one and then living a life of hypocrisy.
Mr. Hogan.
Well, there's no question that the climate of the Earth is changing. I mean, that's a scientific fact. And I also believe that humans have something to do with it. The question is how much and how much and what we can actually do to solve the problem. You know, it's a problem that's of concern to a lot of folks. But let me tell you, the guys on the other side of the aisle in the Democratic Party, for example, the lieutenant governor a couple of weeks ago said his number one priority as governor was going to be stopping climate change. And quite frankly, I don't know that the governor of our little tiny state of Maryland is going to stop the climate of the earth from changing all by himself. My priorities would be a little bit different. My priorities are middle-class families, people that don't have jobs, and these struggling small businesses. And my focus is going to be on, you know, getting the government off our backs and out of our pockets so we can grow the economy and put people back to work and turn this thing around.
Mr. George.
Thank you, Deborah. You know, part of what he just said about the economy is important to me, because one of the reasons that I voted against a few of the environmental bills is that they've punished somebody and they're not going to solve the problem. So just about every environmental bill that's come through the legislature that gets the most attention punishes businesses and waterfront owners and local people and watermen and farmers. there are other answers that we can do, because if all we're going to do is shrink the private sector tax base, which, by the way, there are still 73,000 people that are unemployed, 73,000 more that are unemployed than when this recession began. Maryland has not recovered. We're having more people go across the border to work. So it gives you an idea that the economy isn't as great as people think. We have to grow the tax base. It's shrinking in Baltimore. It's shrinking everywhere. So we cannot get to those solutions. We cannot keep throwing more and more money at it unless we have true solutions. I do have solutions. I have some free market ideas. I'm the one that proposed the wind turbines at Greenberry Point on the north mouth of the Severn. The Navy's going ahead with the project. It won't be government-run. They lease it out to a private company. There's already a grid in place. I'm out of time, but there's many more solutions that we should do that work. This offshore wind one is not going to. Thank you.
And Mr. Craig.
When I went to Towson State College, not Towson University, tells you how long ago, I actually took weather and climatology as a class, and one of the current weathermen, who I won't mention since it's a different channel, was in that class. When people say climate change, they get it wrong. Climate does mean change. Weather, climate, it changes. It has always changed. You go back 28,000 years ago, there would have been no North Sea if you go back 28 years up there. So it is not just about what humans do. Now, the fact that there are 7 billion humans on the Earth does make a change in some ways, but it is not the only thing. So what should government do? Government should institute, what I would do as governor, is do the same thing as a teacher, institute pilot programs, prove that they work, prove that they actually take care of the problem you've come up with, and then, if it doesn't, readjust it so that it actually does take care of that environmental problem.
Thank you. Any rebuttals?
No, I think we're all set. I think you could add them all together and you got a pretty good answer.